Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio.
Footy's on the radio.
And your front row.
For the Fiat Ducato with up to 15 cubic metres of cargo capacity. Move with more grunt.
Welcome to the Saturday Rub.
For Macca's Little Wins app.
Triple M rocks footy.
Yes, a big Saturday afternoon of football today. We're at the MCG, Richmond and St Kilda today for the Fiat Ducato. This is the Saturday Rub for McDonald's. Triple M rocks football. Damien Hardwick to join us shortly, coach of the Tigers. Tom Hickey coming up into the box a little bit later on. And, of course, JB away today, but we'll catch up with him later on. He's gone down to Hobart to watch North play Sydney, taking his place today. Wayne Carey is here. Danny Frawley, Spudder's with us. And, of course, Damien Barrett is also here. Gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to you. Now, Spud, before anyone speaks, I must speak. Because I've rolled in here today and, you know, we've minus our leader, of course, and I've looked up and...
We'll come loaded.
Duck's got the beautiful, nice little thin knitted top just to expand the chest a little. Damo's got a bit of a strikey colour number.
Real
nice,
nicely.
We're all beautifully dressed. But you've come today in a... well, Duck's probably got a million of these and Damo's got a few and I've probably got a few. But you've come in the International 2005 Australian top worn by all of the coaches and in that particular series. You are fair dinkum kidding yourself. Look at you.
Well,
who would wear that in public?
Me.
This is the, this is the Australian top.
It's a tracksuit top from 11 years ago.
That's all right. I just put it on today. It's a bit cold. I was going to wear a...
Real Michelangelo Rucci feel about that spud.
I don't know whether to
were
put
you
this...
A coach, were you a coach in 2005?
Yeah, me
so, wearing
yeah.
it.
No,
yeah.
Assistant or senior? Yeah.
No, under Shees, myself and Soss were dual senior assistant coaches over there in Ireland.
I would have thought if you were the coach, you could probably wear
it. No. Well, I was vice captain in 1990. I didn't wear that one, of course. And in 87, when I was 21, I played over there against Ireland as well. But no, it was great memories. Just thought I'd put it on and... yeah, it feels good to have it on.
Go to at Triple M Footy, Facebook and Twitter and all.
So
you'll
what's
see
wrong
a
with
picture
it?
Of this. Also, you've got a bit of Jeff Poulter on the front of you. You spilt, spilt the dinner down the front there on the where the tie should be. Spud, you can't be wearing crap like that. Most people chuck that sort of stuff out or give it to the kids.
Never throw it out,
the
Brian.
Nephews or something.
No, just wear it now and again. I just thought it looked good on. I sort of could still fit
have
in, which is a good thing.
Have you ever worn your Australian blazer that you get? Have you ever worn that to a function after?
No, I haven't. I haven't, Duck. I look at it every morning when I get up and just have a good look at it. Nearly put it on today, but no, just leave that one, keep the dust off it.
So that's groundbreaking demo in itself. Yeah. But then you and I were and Duck were exposed last night, and JB were exposed to a
extraordinary
plethora of behavioural text.
On text. But this 64. Often happens.
Hang on.
Often it's just one-on-one between people and Spud. But for some reason last night, you included four or five others in it.
It's gone groupie style.
And I didn't realise actually who some of the others were.
You guys know this, but I was in one group. Yeah. I was separate. Yeah.
I had three groups going.
He had three different groups. Because I realised, and then I was having a chat to Lingy. Lingy was in a different group to what I was in. You guys were obviously
and Richo,
in a different group.
To, Richo was in another group. But it was all... No, you started it, Warrior. Don't look at me.
It was Chief. It was Chief started it.
Chief wasn't overly... he wasn't overly praiseworthy of the way my nephew was playing young
James,
Chip.
Yeah.
And he
had
did a have mare. A mare. Let's face it. He didn't
you
have a
weren't
great
overly
game.
Complimentary either, were you?
Well, look, he didn't have his best game. Let's face it. Kennedy was B.O.G.
He is your nephew, Spud.
Yeah, I know that. But the tunnel ball, that was the one that broke the straw that broke the camel's back when he forgot to drop the knees and drop the hips and the ball went straight through his legs.
Mind you, I reckon he had... four or five half volleys on the night, Spud. And he took them all clean.
Except, no, he did.
Except for that one.
Does that explain 64 individual texts canning
from
your
you?
No, it wasn't.
From
it
you
was 64
distributed amongst.
No,
the,
it was just
three groups that you had going. On.
No, it was Chief as well. Don't just put me into it. And Warrior, you started it as well
I
with
can
the.
See I can see you on the net. Falling to the net and grabbing a partner off the net.
Well,
at
let's get to the facts then. Warrior's main text was having a go at your special comments, man, about their inability to call an injury.
Was it?
Yes, it was, Warrior.
Jump
so
on
look
the
at
pack.
Me now.
Give
well,
us your thoughts.
You were having a go
pack.
At Lingy and Richo about the fact of them calling medial ligaments with Nat Nui and Segler. you weren't overly praiseworthy of them.
I like the use of a proper medico on the boundary line. I've been saying that for 20 years.
Yeah, well, do you want me to read out the exact text if you're going to be...
Well, if you're seeing you've clearly done that anyway, do it.
Yeah, no, well, you know, you weren't over praiseworthy of the fact that they were calling medical situations where they probably weren't that experienced to do so. Well,
I made the observation that they didn't spud. That's all I did.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So anyway, I'm just
the diatribe you gave against your nephew.
Anyway, the
Wolfpack... You threw me under the bus and you're not happy with it now.
Wolfpack, jump on. We want to hear from you about spud. Number one, he's dress code today, wearing the full Australian ensemble, and then 64 texts last night canning his nephew.
No,
and the game associated
BT.
With, and every part of the coverage. Of course, he's with Fox. And they
talking
so
about...
Well. Of course, Fox have got a doctor on board as well.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, Rowan White, the big media article today, we won't touch on it too much, but everyone's out of contract. And the guy that's the most prominent out of all this is the name they missed out, Dr. Rowan White. He's actually absolutely outstanding here on Triple M. I'm led to believe that a lot of media outlets are after him, and I'll just make the comment that his manager is no... you're looking at him now. I'm managing Rowan White, so if anyone wants to use his services throughout the finals, Brian, but I'm led to believe that you've got a bit of head wobble this afternoon too.
About what?
Down the 80s reunion for Richmond.
Yes, there is an 80s reunion.
Which
at the
premiership
MCG?
Team is it?
Premiership?
No. Which year is it?
We're celebrating. You're celebrating a prelim.
Prelim.
Final. We're celebrating.
What are you celebrating?
A
then?
Decade of the 80s.
A decade?
Yes.
What? How many final series in that decade, Brian?
Well, if you really want to know, that one premiership and two grand finals.
So were you involved?
Sounds pretty good.
Were you involved in those?
Sort of on the sidelines. A little.
Now, Andy Preston, he'll be down there, won't he? Jimmy Jess?
Yeah, they'll all be there.
Ghost. You want to tell the story to Duck and
look, quick
Andy
story
Preston.
About Andy.
Andy Preston.
We're out at Waverley. Super boxes have just become famous. You know the new super boxes out there at Waverley where you get up there.
Cool.
They're commonplace at all venues around the world now, but they just come in, Duck. You were barely born. And anyway, after the game, we'd won, and Steve Perry himself, Andy Preston, Jimmy Jess, a few had indulged and went up into the super box after the game at 6 p.m. We rocked out at midnight. It was, we'd spent 6 hours in the super box.
And you were working for Jefferson Ford at the time, were you?
Yes, we'd had a fair guzzle. And we walked down to the bottom entry into VFL Park, and I said to the boys, you stay here on the concourse, so I'll go and get the brand new Ford Fairmont delivered by Simon Jefferson that day. Beautiful brown.
A little
colour.
Bit of rain on the grass too, wasn't there? A little bit of precipitation.
Baby shit brown. A lot of gravel in the car park.
And you'd only had two light beers, but.
And all they saw coming towards them, standing on the concourse, was dust and a roaring sound. And it was me doing, silly thing to do at the time, doing donuts all the way back. And Andy's, unbeknown to me, gone over to just have a leak on the car over there. And he's walked into the car park where I was constructing some donuts. And I thought I'd hit a kangaroo. But it was actually Andy. And hit him with the back part of the car, launched him about 20 metres into the air, fractured his shoulder, and went over to pick him up. Tough as nails, Andy Preston. Yep. Farmer, real tough sort of guy. And his bones popping out of the skin. And I said, Andy, mate, you can't dob me in. You know, you're going to have to go to training tomorrow and fall over and say you've done a bit of training.
And that's exactly what he did.
And that's exactly what we did. We got him to training the next day, got him patched up, and he said he slipped in the gutter as he's running a warm-up lap.
Now, you're going to go with the Perth one. You may as well finish it off. The Mandra when you bought the kilometre worth of rope. No?
No, that's too.
All right.
We'll go to that later on. But I want to ask you guys about last night's
game. Before
we
do, you have spoken to Rowan White this morning, haven't you, on those injuries? Can you relay, please, what he said?
Yeah, well, look, the Nick Natanui one, and I know that you guys will talk about Segler because he was on the plane, but the Nick Natanui one, Rowan White had a look at the way he did the injury duck. He said it's very similar to Lance Franklin about 3 years ago when he's playing for Hawthorn, might have been 4 years ago, leading into the finals. Looked like it was a really serious injury. He reckons it's just an impact injury. So there's no ligament damage, in his opinion, only looking at it from the broadcast vision.
So a bone bruise.
A bone bruise, which Lance Franklin was able to go through and play a really big part in the final. So he thinks, first look at it, that it's just bone on bone, hopefully not deep-seated bone bruise, because as you know, any little nick on that and a jarring duck, it inflames. So he seems to think he'll even a chance to play next week, but they'll probably rest him.
Given that, it'll fill up with fluid and everything else. He'll have to drain it.
He does look it's quite interesting, and just looking at Nick Natanui, he's missed a lot of footy, but he does look like he's carrying an extra 2 or 3 kilos to me. Yeah. Well, it's not a lot, but he seems to be carrying it just a little bit more.
We actually put that to Adam Simpson last night. Yeah. He said that he thought the same thing just visually, yeah. but asked his medical staff and doctors, and they said that he was actually in better nick than he had wow. been on a weight basis. So it may have been a conditioning thing. He also said it may have been the black boots. That was what Adam Simpson said. Duck, Jonathan Segler, have you got some intel on him?
No, not really. Oh, well, we flew back with him on the plane, and he basically said, you know, he's been told that it's not great news, and he'll obviously have to have the scans. But all the tests that they've done suggest that he's done his knee.
So Hawthorn supporters out there, brace yourself for
which,
that.
By the
news
way,
it's a big loss.
Yeah,
he's huge.
I brought this up last night on the on Seven, and BT was sort of carrying on about Nick Nat, because Nick Nat's, you know, this. So, well, we think he's a superstar.
Yeah,
well, he is. He's a great player. But let's not forget Segler. He's a big part of this Hawthorn team, and he's good for a goal or two a game. And I'll tell you what, he's every bit as big as loss for Hawthorn.
No doubt.
So Nick Nat is for
the West Coast. We think any less of Hawthorn as a result? They have lost to Melbourne and now West Coast over there in the last 3 weeks.
Well, they're clearly now, they're struggling with big men.
Yep.
It's as simple as that. They contested marks last night. I think it was something like 16 to 2. So they got dominated in the air. Now another big guy goes down. Now, we did speak to Fagan before the game, yes. BT, as you know. The only real big guy that's in a little bit of form in for Box Hill, they're saying, is Schoenmakers. Now, it's whether Schoenmakers comes back in, Spud, and just pinch hits in the ruck, and obviously gives McAvoy a chop out. That's probably the obvious, they're in trouble with their big men.
Spanger's the other one. Spanger's played a game in the VFL development team, so he still thinks he's a chance. But they're going to have to play one of those, Duck, as you know. Roughhead's out for the year. In their premiership years, they had Hale as well. Let's not forget David Hale, how important was.
Well, Segler is a carbon copy, I think.
He certainly is, and now relies on McAvoy to do the whole of the ruck. Now, I'm not sure whether he's able to do that. All season, they've had Segler, McAvoy. Now, Clarko's got to go to McAvoy and say, mate, we need you to play 90% in the ruck, where in the last 20 games, it's been 50%.
So what did West Coast do last night that made it so difficult for Hawthorn to move the ball?
Well, their pressure was fantastic. Yep. We were there. I thought it was great. And I just think that the Hawks, too, also had an off night. Mitchell missed targets. Mitchell obviously had a quiet night. Hodge missed that target, I think, in the second quarter.
Gibson and Frawley.
You know, Gibson missed targets. Frawley missed targets. Whenever Frawley gets a possession, and I think he's had a great year, and I think he's been really good, but when... You never see Frawley under pressure when he's kicking the ball. It's after a mark or a little handball and he just chips it sideways. They were able to put him under pressure last night with his kicking, whereas the ones that Mitchell made and Hodge and Gibson, they were under no pressure. They made mistakes you just don't see them make normally. So off night, West Coast pressure was at its absolute optimum and they dominated in the air. Darling, Kennedy, they all...
What about the other end,
McGovern? They all marked the ball as well as any big man in one game for the year.
Another player that hasn't been talked about, and we know that Segler's a big out, is Stratton. Stratton's he's not a McGovern, but he actually allows Frawley and Gibson, more Gibson, to play his natural role. Gibson had to defend last night. Stratton's out of the team. Now, he may not come back.
No,
he is a huge loss for them.
Yeah.
And he's not a big name for Hawthorn, but I know the Clarko, he's one of the first pick, because it allows Gibson to go and read the ball, fly the ball, spoil it, intercept. No Stratton means Gibson has to defend, which means he's defending big guys now. So don't worry. With Segler and Stratton out, they're two players that Alistair Clarkson needed in the finals.
And I know he's not taking any part in the year, but Roughhead as well. Don't underestimate much smaller he makes the forward line.
West Coast did a really good job last night, both in defence and as a forward group, of protecting that guy going for the mark and not giving away a free kick, like getting in between.
Yep.
Lysette was really good at it.
Yo did it a couple of times.
It was really well done. And just talking about Gibson, I don't know whether it was a plan. Clearly, what you want to do with any defence is isolate them. You always want one-on-one. You don't ever want that third.
He had 40 possessions last time they played
44. Yep. What they were able to do, they were able to get him involved in the contest, so he had to stay with his man, and he got caught in or under the footy rather than run and jump at the footy. Now, whether that was a deliberate thing or whether that's how it worked out, clearly when you get a guy early, like Kennedy and Darling, marking the footy, then all of a sudden your focus goes, they go, hang on, we've got to man up. We've got to make sure we're on him. Your focus goes. And then if you use the right option, but all of a sudden, the game opens up for you, and that's what happened.
And that's the pressure, I think, BT, to answer your question. The pressure West Coast put on the Hawthorn ball carriers. But let's face it, when September comes, the nostrils will flare, and Hawthorn will gain another leg. They are having a downer. If you're going to have a downer, have it now. Not in the first week of the finals.
They are a chance of missing the top four.
Yeah, they are.
By the way, the Wolfpack's going absolutely crazy, Damo. Let's fire a few of those out before we get into the top eight.
Yeah, the jacket that Spud's wearing, which is the 2005 International Rules jacket he wore as an assistant coach there, is just lit up our Twitter. The brand is taking a hit. You're a flog, Spud. That's from Brett Troke. A walk-up start for the Smacker Olympics. Matthew Gangel's offered that, and that's taken off in itself. Matt
King
Pomeroy
Smacker.
Thinks Spud wins it hands down. So that's been the dominant conversation on the pack today.
So the general feeling is King Smacker out of all of that for you, Spud. So just sitting there quietly, you've got no rebound on it at the moment, Spud. Hey, but we're talking about what can happen. Let's assume that all of the teams that should win from here on in this round win, Duck. What does that mean?
This round and next round.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what does that mean in terms of what the ladder might look like and therefore our finals?
Yeah, what it means is Sydney will finish on top.
Yep.
And this all comes down to percentage, remember? Yes. So like you said, if all the favourites win over the next two weeks. So Sydney, top. Adelaide, second. Geelong, third. Hawks, finish fourth.
Fourth, yeah.
Given the Eagles play Adelaide in Adelaide next week, Adelaide will beat the Eagles. We're saying GWS will finish fifth, Eagles sixth, Dogs seventh, Kangaroos eighth.
Right.
But the Kangaroos, clearly, we don't know whether they'll go in favourites or not against GWS, depending on the result, I assume,
week
today.
Week one but of the finals, it's different this year. It's not... Damo, yep. Wide open as a result of the bye?
Look, we don't know, do we? We don't know the effect of this bye is going to have. It's going to suck the life out of any momentum going into the finals as a generality. But when it comes to the specifics of how these first week of finals play out, the two qualifying finals, the two elimination finals, who knows? There may well be an advantage for the first time under this current eight system for those teams down the bottom of the eight. And Alistair Clarkson, when the coaches met with Gillon McLachlan mid-season, guys, he was very vocal and got quite robust in his criticism of this rest period because, as he explains it, the team that wins the qualifying final, BT, will have had the rest the previous week, will then have a rest the week after. They'll play one game in 3 weeks going into that preliminary final. And last night, post-match, he's got a lot to think about given the Segler injury and the form of the Hawks, but he just does express his own reservations about this new system.
The huge curveball with this year's final series is that bye after the round 23. And no one really knows. It's unique. It's never been done in the game before. No one knows how it's going to pan out. Even if you win the first final, you then got a very, very nervous wait when you get into the prelim. You've had one game in about 3 weeks or 4 weeks, which is really, really unique. So I don't really know where we want to finish, to be fair. But all I do know in history, top four's been the best spot. So that's what we're going for. So we've got a game of footy next week. But if we lose, it's not the be-all and end-all. We'll still give ourselves a chance. If there's any year there's a chance to come from outside the top four, it's this year.
And just to back over that, this topic was the heated one to the point where it got really angry, really robust with Gillon McLachlan from Alistair Clarkson's direction with the coaches, and he had a lot of support
at the dinner itself.
Really? I mean, they sorted it out. There was no lingering after effects to it, but it was the high point of that particular gathering, and we're now 2 weeks away from seeing how it does play out.
I think you're right on on all of it, but the momentum, I think it's going to be a momentum killer. Hey, Duck, just looking at if all of the favourites went over the remaining two rounds of this season and they finish the way you suggested, Sydney, Adelaide, Cats, Hawks, top four, and then Eagles, GWS, that means we won't have one final in Melbourne in that first week.
No, that's right, because you've got, it'll be Sydney, Hawks, Adelaide, Cats, and you'll have Eagles, Dogs, and GWS North.
Yeah,
you're exactly right.
So that's
that finished like that, that is exactly right.
So think about this, ladies and gentlemen. So you've got the bye.
Got the bye.
No footy. It's like a big empty drum. It's been drained out. Then you go the second week. No footy in Melbourne.
Crickets.
No, footy. For yeah, 2 weeks.
Cricket's and tumbleweed.
Leading into the finals.
It'll be gone next year.
And the spin around this bye period by the AFL is reaching extraordinary levels too. They're trying to make out as though it's a positive for the competition.
Won't happen next year.
I can't have it. I'm prepared to see how it unfolds, to see how exactly disastrous it is for the competition, BT.
And, but the third ingredient, throw in a public holiday on Grand Final Friday as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's still there, is it?
Put your forward thinking on. The press conference now for the prelim final for a side that won the first week of the finals, then has a week off, a month out of playing. Mm. They get beat because their first quarter was terrible. Just put the press conference now. The AFL, this bye, has cost us a chance to play in the grand final. And I know the coaches won't use an excuse, but it's already in their back pocket. I've got no doubting. This is bigger than what they make out. You ask any conditioning coach, and I know that they don't control the whole scenario, but BT hit the nail on the head. Momentum factor is huge in footy. You haven't played a game for a month in a prelim final with the biggest game of the year to play in a grand final, and you're rusty in the first quarter, and then come over the top and get people 2 points. Just watch the press conference from the senior coach who finished on top of the ladder and goes out. Watch that.
We've concentrated our thoughts on mainly Hawthorn at this stage. Just quickly, a couple of minutes on the West Coast Eagles. They last night beat just the third of the top eight sides this year. They'd only beaten two top eight sides going into last night's game. They win that. Do we think any differently? Do we all of a sudden think that they are a genuine contender? They are one of last year's grand finalists after all. Do we think they're a bottom part of the top eight?
They were impressive last night, but I don't think they've shown that consistently enough. And with the doubt over Nick Nat, and he is important.
So you think pretenders?
I tend to think pretenders.
I think under Mummy's umbrella, they're very good. They're very good over there, but the grand final's not played there. So they are very hard to beat over there at Domain. They've got their mojo back. McGovern's in really good form. Kennedy's in good form. Their midfield are good. So forget the last part of the season. They've probably had a plan to make sure they peak at the right time. They didn't peak in grand final day, so they're in it up to their ears, but they have to win a big game out here at the MCG, which I don't think they can.
Yeah, I'm not convinced on the West Coast Eagles either, Damo. What about yourself?
I like what they did last week, hung in there against GWS. I think you add that to last night, and I'm a convert now in the past 2 weeks on their form. They've hung in there all year. They've got themselves to a position where they're reasonably comfortable with it, and I think there are a live chance.
But they finish, if they get beaten next week, they finish probably sixth.
Yep. Going to be hard from there. Lewis Jetta read the riot act before the game. Told by his coach he's got to fit into the way we do things. A lot of words describing things aren't going well with him, and this is his last chance. Did he do enough last night to say, okay, I'm now back in this side and going to play a part?
I thought his pressure acts were really good, BT.
The first half?
Yeah, I thought his tackling was really good. I think he ran out of juice a little bit, but I think he did enough at the start of the game for the coach to sit and watch the way he played to say the penny's dropping. Hasn't dropped completely, but it's dropping, and I got no doubt.
What he showed was intent and desperation, and something that I have not seen from him all year, BT. So, well done to him.
Damo, some big news coming out of Bomberland.
Yeah, it's come out of the Essendon website itself, so it's official that Michael Hibbert has informed the club that he wishes to seek a fresh start elsewhere next season. So, 48 hours after the Michael Hurley decision to stay at the club, the Hibbert situation is that he's out, and the connection with Melbourne has been strong now for a good 8 to 10 weeks, and that is via the coaching next year of Simon Goodwin, and that would be seemingly where Nahinel takes his football.
Wow, that's big news.
Where do you see Hibbert as a footballer?
I like him.
I think McDonald Tipping-Wadi's elevation this year helps Essendon make that decision or accept that decision quite well, BT, because he was asked for a fair bit more money, Hibbert, and while I think he's been a very good player, I think they can see someone playing in that same position, obviously on a lot less money. He was one of the great stories of 2016.
Is he a very good player?
He's a depth
Woody
player.
Or Hibbert.
I'd call him a good player.
He's a depth player.
Yeah, I don't think he's a very good player.
No, he's not. He's a depth player. That's what he is.
How old is Hibbert?
He'd be in the late 20s, I suppose, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he started late, come down from the VFL, Port Melbourne. He's tough. That's what I like about him. He's unconditional. I think he's the type of player, Duck, that as a coach, you could just put him on the back flank and thought, okay, he's not going to win the game for us, but I'm happy for him to play there and beat the half forward and give us a bit of grunt. I don't think he's a star.
Some of these Essendon players, while they've been out for a year, some of them have grown reputations of being really, 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 really good players, and some of them have sort of dropped off. Yeah. I'm not sure. Some of them are a lot better than what I remember.
I'd like to get your thoughts on that later re-signed. On, Doug. We are going to delve into the whole listening situation later on in the show, and I'll certainly delve
I'm
into that
fan,
point.
I'm a fan. By the way, I think the Bombers are a real chance to threaten the eight next year. I think they can actually crack the eight. They're one of about eight sides that can do it, but I'm a fan.
And so, BT, Hibbert arrived back from his overseas holiday only yesterday, so he's made that decision formal in the past 24 hours, clearly, and the club has reacted today publicly. And it leaves, obviously, Ben Howlett now. Tate Pearce, we feel, is going to take the Fireman's job that seems to be in front of him for a long time. And the big one is, obviously, from an emotional and sentimental perspective, Joe Watson. But he'll be given effectively as much time as he needs within the confines of the machinations of our list.
I know the players, some people feel sorry for them, and I do, but I then have a bit of a smirk on my face to say, oh, they're coming back from their overseas trip for 5 months, 6 months. Gee whiz. It's a big price to pay. We want to play AFL footy, but, you know, it's not as if they're doing, you know, penitentiary or something, is it really? They're overseas for 6 months.
Paid too.
They're going overseas for 6 months and having a jaunt and having a pretty good time. So, in the scheme of things, do 3 billion Chinese really care if they've been overseas for 6 months? God, they're hard done by.
In 2009, the Saturday Rub brought you the iconic
World According to the Cool Breeze.
And now, it brings you
Cool Breeze Chronicles.
That's the longest stinger.
That's longer than the segment.
Yeah.
Now, we've retraced Brian's days, the ugly latter days at Richmond Footy Club when they basically kicked him out.
That story I told before, that was early 80s. That's why we misbehaved like that. Yeah. Don't condone it.
No, you only had the two light beers, I think, that night. Yep. So Brian's left Richmond. He got caught drinking before a game on a Friday night and they kicked him out. So he's now at Collingwood and he's kicking lots of goals. But early in this Collingwood career, boys, the habit emerges where he's giving away free kicks by pushing people into the back. And he's starting to showing a lot of signs of aggression against Melbourne in one particular game. There were two fights against Danny Hughes. And this is the match report at the time by Peter Simonovic. Taylor had to be restrained by several teammates, including Mark Williams, the captain of the Collingwood Footy Club, and the Pies runner. Bob Rose, the coach at the time, was very defensive of Bristol post-game. He wasn't the aggressor. He's a human being. He'll cop only so much. He's not a coward, Brian. He's not going to run away. You get to Windy Hill, BT, and this was a famous game. You gave away two free kicks in the last minute in the goal square, and the Bombers ended up winning the game. And this is, again, match report from that particular game.
Oh, boy.
Taylor was furiously hurling the ball away, shouting at umpire Peter Cameron, and then standing toe-to-toe, arguing with Cameron. The Pies, in the days after this particular game, were so affronted by what was happening to you, which is a surprise. Took this matter to the AFL and they officially complained. There was a board decision, Duck, to actually take this matter to the VFL. So Brian then starts getting a few free kicks. He kicks 12 goals against the Sydney Swans.
Oh,
that was your career high, I believe.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
I like this, though. In the days after it, people were...
Was that the game where he had no handballs? He kicked 12 goals, two behinds, 15 kicks, no handballs.
I didn't delve that deep into the stats.
Well, I had a look at that with Two Man about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really? No handballs.
Not one.
So, in the days after it, all the papers are critiquing the great Collingwood recruit kicking 12 goals and on his way to 100 goals for the season. And then a famous Collingwood person bobbed up, BT, Peter McKenna. Oh. And he seemed to be taking all the credit for what was happening with you. Brian asked me to come and see him at training. Oh. I told him to run, and lead. Oh, I talked about that with Brian. I told him when to lead. Basically, Brian is not a super confident player. He was down on confidence, and I helped him.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Peter McKenna taking the credit there. Also, 2BT, and I think Snorker will post this on the social media platforms of Triple M. There's an article in this stash of documents that have been given to us. You've received a visit by what can best be described as a mad scientist telling you how to kick the football, you're on the way to be kicking 100 goals.
I vaguely remember this.
And he's got all these sorts of devices. And you can see, and we'll post this up pretty soon, you can see the look on your face that you weren't completely buying what he was telling you to do.
I think I was in a bit of a hole at the stage, and the club said, you need any help you can get, so go out and listen to this guy. And I thought, I'll give him give him five. And when I got out and met him, I said, no, just give him one.
But doesn't that sum up, it sums up, like, BT's attitude back then, knowing, okay, so this is, clearly he had anger management problems, in terms of his goal kicking and everything else, he was prepared to do everything. Get McKenna down there, everyone down there. You've got these kids now.
They don't want to know about them.
They can't kick straight, can't do anything. They don't go out of their way to go and seek help. Some do, but a lot don't.
Not allowed to.
It's a good lesson. And BT was doing that in the 80s.
Yes.
Ahead of your time, BT. Yeah.
So your Collingwood career's taking off,
BT. Did you take it on board, Peter McKenna's
thoughts? Pete was great. Pete was fantastic.
Well, what about the running side of it? I find that a bit confusing.
I would have thought that that was just something that you knew you had to do.
You had to do run.
I don't remember you running up and down the ground much, Brian.
When you haven't got great faith in those in front of you delivering the ball, lace out on the lead and kicking it over your head, you tend to stay back. And there was a bit of that going on. But then I became a leading machine. And once I led and got in front, not even Usbud could get around
me. Well, you did have an ample backside. There's no doubting that. And that big bont of yours, it was hard to get around. There's no doubting that.
Time for the Saturday sermon now.
Thank you, looking forward to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got here today for Bristol's Saturday sermon.
It's a shortly prepared sermon. $38 million for the swim team alone. Taxpayers' money, Damo. Mm. That's I think it's worked out at $12 million per gold medal we've paid to get this mob over there. Swimming is the number one ticket item, Spud, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. Before we do, the chef de mission, Kitty Chiller. Now, Kitty.
You've done a great job.
At what?
Kitty. It's not about you handing out Mozzie bite type penalties, Kitty. I mean, Emma McKeon failed to text that she was coming home when she was out, probably having a...
with her mates.
Having a crack at, you know, having a good night, I would suggest.
Which she's allowed to do.
And she got hauled back in and Kitty said, hey, Emma, you're 26, you can't be going out. You can't be going out. You've got to text us and let us know. Yeah, Kitty, you need to go out a little. You need to relax a little more. Go out and have a good night, Kitty. No more curfews. No more. Ask Spud and Duck about curfews. When you are, a curfew is hung in front of you, what would you immediately do, Duck?
Work our way around it.
Break it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Swimming. We had the world champions in McAvoy and the Campbell sisters.
Oh, yeah.
What did we get in the end? Not a thing out of the world champs. Apparently, psyched up by our team psychologist who's been brought in, given 4 years to do the job when they failed last time in this area, couldn't get it done. Disgraceful. Now, hockey, the sport you play when you're no good at any of the mainstream sports. Duck.
Hockey one, hockey two.
Hockey's a great game. I love hockey, and we're very good at it.
It's a sport for people like Damo. You know, let's face it. Our men and women, world champions, never going to be beaten. Not a thing. Not a medal out of them. Basketball, the Opals, Penny Taylor, who I love, one of the best players in the world. Nothing coming from them. They choked. That was a real symbol of chokeism, if I've ever seen it. Of course, the Boomers today as well didn't get their stuff together. Cycling, one Australian medal, Great Britain, who we normally beat. 12 medals there, Duck. Rowing, just terrible, except for one highlight, Kim Brennan, who's Maxie Crowe's daughter. She's absolutely brilliant. She was my athlete of the year this year, but in general.
The cycling, Brian?
They've been, cycling. One medal, Spud.
Yeah, we were the best in the world 10 years ago.
The solution to this, before you speak, Duck, the solution for all of this is we've got to change the Olympic qualification trials. So at the moment, ours are about a year out from the Olympics, which means they've got to peak 1 year out before the Olympics and then peak again for the Olympics, okay? So in America, they do it a couple of weeks before the Olympic Games. I'm thinking that it hasn't worked for us over the last couple of years. They need to have an investigation into that, and we need to have our trials closer to the Olympic Games.
So it's in the preparation. I tend to think that, because you don't just get there and these results...
Australians have never been known as chokers.
No, they're not.
And we are now.
No, I don't think they're chokers, PT. I honestly don't. Either you can have a bad day, just like out here, Essendon can knock off... you know, one of the teams above them this year. They've won two games, maybe games they shouldn't have won. You can have bad days, and clearly some of our athletes have had bad days, but I think it's in their preparation. I tend to agree. I'm glad you got to that point in the end.
So the crux of the sermon, right?
The crux of the service.
Was it Kitty Chiller or Australian Olympics or American selection system?
The crux is Kitty. Let it go. Let it go, Kitty. Let them go. Let them enjoy themselves. And, Kitty, don't you go out with them. You stay home with your boring old buff-head husband or whoever he is. Just let them go. Kitty, let them go. Take the shackles off.
I thought your conclusion was we peaked too early.
Conclusion was weak. I had 35 seconds to think that through.
Yeah, no, it's very good, Brian, which leads me to... Luke Darcy's doing a great job for Triple M, but it's fair to say he's got ahead of himself.
Does he ever work?
He went over to Rio for 2 weeks. Here's a sample of some of his work on the Hot Breakfast.
We started at an Adidas party. So Channel 7 have got a lot of their partners over here. So Big Gil McLaughlin, the AFL CEO, is in town. And Gil dropped by with Miles Rose from Swimming Australia and Adam Hilton, who runs all the Swiss advertising, come from having a few drinks. This is literally what Gil had been doing. He had a few drinks with Kerry Stokes and Gina Reinhart. I was out at Paco Olimpico, and I was talking to an IOC member. Mark Barretta turned up from Channel 7 Sunrise with his camera and his crew. I'm waiting for Barretta to pull rank and ring the big boss, Kerry Stokes. Bolt finishes, wins the race. His first move is about a metre away from me. I've got to show you a photo. I've got to reach out and put my hand and touched him on the shoulder, and I bump into Nick Green. And I was on Ipanema Beach today.
How many names you want to drop?
No, that was a sample. That was a sample, of the Flog Fest that is now commonly known as Pencilhead Darcy. He drops more names than the previous great man, Mike Williamson, like Greg Norman, Warney. He's making out his son,
Bill.
Superstar, worldwide celebrity. You're a battler from the western suburbs down there over the Westgate, Darce. Pull your head in. You flog. Absolute wanker.
He has
dropped more names in the last 3 weeks. Gil Liss, Stokesy, that. The Swiss CEO. What a joke. Get a grip. Actually, don't get a grip. That's the trouble. You've had a grip of yourself. Let it go. Darce, you've lost it.
You're a
completely.
Smacker. You're a leading smacker, Darce.
Darce. You've turned into a real flog. A real flog. Have a look at me. Me. I'm going to drop more names in a sentence than anyone in the history of the world. You get a grip on yourself.
The pack. We want to hear from you on that. Hey, by the way, Damo, just before we go to the break on Ducks top eight there, that would mean if we got those finals the way they turned out,
yes.
What does it mean for a Thursday final?
It would mean that first week of the finals that the AFL is a real appetite, as far as we know, for them to have that play, the Crows v Sydney Swans. Sorry, Crows v Cats. Crows v Cats. Qualifying final on the Thursday night in Adelaide.
Okay.
What if North play the Giants?
And that would be almost a certainty. Spud has just given a nice old strafing to Darce, and he's effectively you've pickled him. How's the pack gone on it, Damo?
They like it, BT. Georgie Templeton thinks the head wobbler of the year should now be renamed the Golden Pipe Cleaner.
Yeah.
Darcy's copying it. You won't want to read this when he gets back to the Hot Breakfast on Monday. Seems like Spud is in career best form after 4 weeks of giving absolutely nothing on the Saturday rub.
Yeah.
That's from Nathan Schultz, true, Spud.
That's true, Spud.
No, it's
Lee
not
Jones
true.
Is on that theme, too. This is true. Coming off a very low base the past 4 weeks, but that's some of Spud's finest work. And George Karapas goes a step further. He reckons your slump's been a bit longer than 4 weeks. It's taken 22 weeks.
No, it hasn't, George.
But
settle
finally
down.
Spud shows he's got something to offer. So they're just coming in, B2.
There's a little bit more, too. Yeah. I'm led to believe. A couple of years ago at the airport, we'd go and...
Spud, don't mess it up.
Darce would get his little trolley boy to... wheel his
We saw this, didn't we?
In.
We got off the plane
2 years ago,
and the driver had to wheel his
wheel it in.
His compartment size baggies. Wasn't not even a big bag.
Now,
Darce,
he better be working tonight, because if he doesn't work tonight on the broadcast, BT,
I don't think he is.
Now he should, but he got in yesterday. So if he say he can't work because of jet lag. Seriously, Darce, who do you think you are? Let it go. Not enough.
The pack is there, and Twitter is there for you if you want to jump on right now. Hey, Trades Damo, what's happening
in
the... It's really got you going lift. In the last 2 or 3 days, isn't it?
It has, and obviously the Hibbert situation now comes into play with Essendon putting out a press release saying that he will be seeking a leave, and we believe that to be Melbourne. How that plays out is going to become interesting. How Richmond gets Dion Prestia to their club after he has given them about 3 weeks ago, BT, the undertaking he would be seeking to go there.
Won't have far to walk, Dion, anyway. Yes, go on.
What's that mean?
Dion won't have far to walk, I don't think.
Because?
Might be in the neighbourhood of here somewhere.
Already?
Oh, well, I'm not sure about that, but...
No, he's already committed to Richmond.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, yeah. I think he's bought something around here.
Right, okay. Okay. Yeah. So, Richmond, as it stands, Duck, has picked 6 on current ladder positions in the national draft. Gold Coast will be seeking that. I don't expect Richmond to just cough that up and be the neat deal.
Give it up.
Do you think they have to?
Absolutely. You've got a ready-made player that's already done the development side of it. You've got a kid. Pick 6, yeah.
He's only 23.
Could end up being a superstar, the pick 6, but it could end up being nothing.
We discussed this last week, didn't we?
You take Prestia.
If you've got the low pick and he's already there ready to have an effect.
Well, he's been developed.
There is no risk.
No, there's no risk at all. You've got a ready-made player come in. It's got 10 years to play, and the kid, the pick 6 is the great unknown.
Yeah.
Could be a beauty or a flop.
I expect them to try and, if they do give that up, to then try and get Prestia and something back in some form. But the Gold Coast will play hardball.
I actually reckon that's almost your perfect scenario. That's about exactly what...
Yeah, okay.
Well, for just a clean swap. I don't think that should be difficult at all.
Look, and you're right, Ducks. St Kilda last year were criticised for pick 5 for Carlisle. But what a lot of people didn't understand, they actually traded picks as well.
Yeah.
And they got pick 18, which was Gresham. So for pick 5, St Kilda got Carlisle and Gresham. Mm. So, which ended up being a really good pick, because Gresham looks like he's going to be a pretty good midfielder.
Yeah, he's a gun. Look, Gold Coast is looming as the big player in this period that we've got upcoming. They've already got, and don't hold me to this being the exact number, but something like 6 picks inside the top 29 or 30 as it stands. Now, they will get in another top pick for Dion Prestia. They will also get in at least one, and they're going to be demanding of 2 if Jager O'Meara takes off as well. And I'm now starting to think he's in that zone more than the stay zone. So there's still lots to play up there, but they could well have up to 10 picks inside the top 35 to 40, which will make them very dangerous. The story reported today by Andrew Hamilton, BT, in the Herald Sun, and obviously initially from the Courier Mail, it is real that Gold Coast Suns are prepared to offer up 2 first round draft picks for Nat Fyfe. Now, as far-fetched and as bizarre as that sounds, that is the story in itself, that they are prepared to do that, Duck. And obviously the conversation flows on from that. We know that Fyfe is contracted next year to Fremantle. We know he's a free agent at the end of 2017. What has been happening since free agency has come in? Some of these free agents are having their careers sorted out 12 months in advance, because that way the club gets something for them, as opposed to being given the AFL-adjudicated compensation, which... It basically comes down to what suits the AFL at that given point in time. That's about the formula they operate on. So it is an interesting one. There will be a conversation around that. And while I don't expect it to happen, it is going to be discussed.
Just the question on Fyfe. What's the word coming out of Fremantle? Why would he want to? Is he that sort of guy that would want to get out of there? And
what do you make of it? He's clearly a country boy, and he likes getting back home in the break and, you know, drives the big trucks and that around, and I'm not sure moving to a big city like Melbourne would necessarily suit him. But in terms of what you hear out of Fremantle, and we all hear the same stuff, and that and actually Mundy said it in a press conference last week, that Nat Fyfe is very demanding on his teammates, and, you know, demands...
That's not such a bad thing, though, is it?
Well,
It's not when you're on top of the ladder, Spud. It is when you're three wins for the season.
Spud, what you've got to remember as a leader, I think, is that the way you prepare and the way you go about things isn't necessarily how everyone else does.
No.
Now, as long as they're not breaking any rules, some players don't live, breathe, you know, football. They like to have life's outside footy. Not everyone likes to do everything how you like
Swan
to do it.
Swan is a good example. Don't Swan.
As long as you don't try to typecast your teammates into yourself or morph them into yourself and how you think or how you go about things.
Damo's point is
that's
a beauty.
The key.
That is when you're on top of the ladder and going beautifully. That is sort of what's expected, and you can set those
benchmarks
higher.
That annoy people. And some people, I use the Tom Rockliffe example, Justin Lepich encouraged him to be divisive. And I'll put the word divisive in inverted commas because it does have different connotations. But it's okay when you've got the full support of Justin Lepich, but it's not okay when Justin Lepich is about to be given the heave-ho himself. So, yeah, that is the situation. When you ask BT, is it real? Yeah, it is real. It is a divisive issue at Fremantle. And again, as Spud said, sometimes it's encouraged, other times it's not, and it is now being debated. While we're on Fremantle, Ballantyne, it is quite extraordinary that the heart and soul of that footy club in so many ways has a year to run of the contract, and he has been seeking to get out of it. Now, people might say it's a bit two-faced, that he wants an extended deal, which the Dockers won't give him, and that too is fact. But he is a very important person to the makeup of that footy club, and I can't see him being there. Main will also not be there, BT. Barlow won't be there either. They've got to attempt to bring in Cam McCarthy on the undertaking they gave last year in some form. They're also desperately trying to get Brad Hill, and they will be trying to get involved in the Rory Lobb situation. Lobb being contracted to GWS, but has made it known to both clubs through his management that, hey, if you want to put something to me this year before I'm out of contract next year, let's explore it, and that will be explored. Carlton, a bit like Gold Coast, I reckon, guys, in terms of what they will do in the trade period, they're going to be very busy again. Still interested in Tom Mitchell, although don't want to pay him the big money that he's really after. Marchbank from GWS is contracted, as is Tomlinson, for next year at GWS, but I expect those two players to be discussed very heavily from a Carlton perspective.
Tomlinson,
come trade period.
I reckon, is a certainty to come back. I absolutely
playing good footy at the moment.
Yeah, played last week, played quite well, Damo.
Okay, Hawthorn still in the race with Mitchell from the Swans and were the underbidder effectively on Prestia. Melbourne, a similar situation with Hogan as Fremantle does with Fife. Out of contract next year, but we'll be hoping to lock him away sooner. And a couple of clubs that are absolutely bursting points salary cap-wise, BT, Geelong and Port Adelaide, I don't expect to be doing too much in trade period, and the Sydney Swans are in a very similar situation.
Damo, interesting story brewing, not necessarily concerning Aussie Rules footy.
No, it's not, but it is a massive story, this one. Bledisloe Cup match tonight, Australia versus New Zealand in Sydney. There has been a recording device found in the hotel room of the All Blacks.
Hang on.
It's an extraordinary situation.
Recording device found in the hotel of the All Blacks.
Yes. And the New Zealand Rugby Union has actually confirmed this story and is taking further action to work out who planted it. Was it someone to do with something to do with the Australian team? Was it someone to do with one of the betting firms? Was it someone just being a voyeur wanting to hear what was going on with all the planning for this particular test match? So
I'd
it's an extraordinary story.
It is an extraordinary story. That can only be planted by Australia. It's not a good thing to do.
Did you say Australia?
It probably would have to be, wouldn't
it? Might be a bookmaker, BT.
Oh, okay. You're thinking along those lines.
Look, I think the natural reaction is that it is the opposition, which makes me want to...
Something never been done in sport before. I've never heard about the planting of such things.
Haven't you?
What do you mean?
Because you know I've asked you this question for about 25 years.
This is an elephant in the room,
I want you to go back to your VFL... VFA as it
He's
was back then.
He's got his arms folded, guys.
The Paran, when you coached, and you initially captain coach of Paran Footy Club, I was a young reporter.
You were.
Scared of you. And it got to me in your second year there, I think it was, that you may have been recording the opposition.
Be careful here.
Well, you and I've discussed this over 25 years. I just want to put it on the table now. We're going to do it on the radio, Duck.
Yep.
This is how the story goes. It did get to my attention that BT, or maybe someone at Paran, maybe not BT, was bugging the opposition rooms, not just before the game, but in the coach's box as well.
Home ground.
In there at Turek.
Yeah.
Yep.
They would have a bug in the opposition rooms for every home game that they played.
And so sophisticated was it put to me that this was, that not just was it just in the change rooms, but in the coach's box during the game itself. Now, I want to go with this story 25 years ago.
Did they win any flags?
They were very successful in their own way. They made prelim finals for
but no flag, so they're bugging and they still couldn't win a flag.
Well, they couldn't bug the neutral venues. That's the problem.
There's no proof of any bugging. Now, Duck, let's get that straight.
I was scared at the time, Duck, to go with this story because I was, you know, threatened with very serious legal ramifications and even physical ones by Brian. Over the journey, though, I think you've softened on this situation to the point where I think you might be about to, 25 years after the event, admit to it.
No, I won't be admitting to the bugging of someone's rooms.
Come on.
Damo.
You won't be admitting to it, but did it happen, BT? Could someone possibly associated with you at Paran at the time, possibly, outside your knowledge, have done that?
I did hear the rumour that there was
a... you heard the rumour. Was you the...
That there was a bug placed above the whiteboard. But I, other than hearing the rumour, I have no other knowledge.
What do you mean you've got no other knowledge?
Is it possible, BT, you might have, without realising it, have used some of the information gleaned out of those bugging systems?
I do remember the day I was walking past someone sitting on the grass banks at Toorak Park there, tuned to an FM radio, and it didn't sound like the normal FM radio. It sounded like the coach's room. And so I stopped and stopped by and I thought, that's interesting, mate. Where'd you get that from? He didn't tell me anything. And so I walked off. But no, I can't have claimed to have done any such crime. But this...
You've got your arms folded, which is a perfect example of body language that you're hiding something.
The Cup story is very, very big.
You're hiding something, Brian.
They do make them very small these days.
If someone did do that at Paran, was it an old-fashioned recording tape recorder type device, or was it just a little bug type thing?
Look, I don't know. I've heard all sorts of things, but lipstick, you know, recorder, you know, little ones. But I, once again,
you wouldn't know, would you?
I wouldn't know.
You wouldn't have. You certainly wouldn't have ordered someone to do it.
Nothing
would you?
To do with me, Duck.
Yeah, Warrior, I felt he did order it, Spud, but he's always denied that. So
when you were reporting. These days, were you dead set scared of Brian?
Yeah, I seriously was scared of him. Particularly after I think he didn't you abuse an umpire down there at that same venue one day, and you were not talking to even your own team at that stage, and I was too scared to put my own tape recorder under your mouth.
Remember they sent me off under the send off rule, and I refused to go off. So the cops
that was the night that was the game. Yes,
do you remember him, Brian?
Can I just say
that was the game?
BT's respect now for the umpires is, I think, higher than any commentator in the game.
Yes.
He always mentions them by their name. In actual fact, BT, when we got off the red eye this morning, I walked through the airport with Hayden Kennedy, who's the head of the umpires. And he...
You've got a bit of Luke Dass.
He was Dass.
I'm not sure I'm dropping Hayden's name.
He's saying that Hayden's not a big name?
No, he is a big name. He's he's a great umpire, was a great umpire. But he loves the fact that the way you treat the umpires now, you mention them by their first name and you talk about them, and you mentioned last night on the telecast how they're right now playing for a grand final just like the players are. And he's very complimentary. Do you think that you're doing that now because you were so bad at treating them in a previous life? So you're trying to make up for sort of your behaviour beforehand?
I like the umpires, Duck.
Yeah, you do now.
Yeah, I do now. No, I don't think that's the reason I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I'm an involver of all people in our game.
Would you say that you are a little bit embarrassed by the way you used to treat the umpires back then?
There's a glint of embarrassment when my kids look at me as if to say, Dad, you're an absolute psycho. What is wrong with you?
You weren't great on that front either, were you, though, Duck?
No.
All right, boys. JB's waiting in Hobart down there. Big game down there. Of course, no changes in this game down there. JB, you're standing by there in Hobart.
Nice to be speaking to you, gentlemen. What's going on, please?
Why aren't you here? You know, the captain just walks away and just deserts the ship.
Well, we've got a massive game down here, of course. Hobart to North Melbourne play the Sydney Swans for a spot in the eight to confirm that. So, much as I'd love to be with you boys, I've actually got business elsewhere.
Sound a bit down,
JB. Yeah, get up, mate.
Come on, what's wrong
with you? Well, I've got to work my way into it. The bounce of the ball is 145, so I'm just nice and calm. It's how I've always operated. And then when the bounce comes, the arousal levels get up.
Any puppy love action down there? Or what's going on?
Nothing. I'm sitting with Ben Buckley and Carl Delina in a car, so if there is puppy love, I'm in all sorts.
You're sure there's no someone coming down a bit later on a later flight, JB?
None of your business, bud.
Bit of Wine Glass Bay treatment tonight or something?
Like I said, none of your business. Actually, tonight we've got a board meeting dinner with the head of TT Line, Spirit of Tasmania. So,
what's going to be
business this one?
What's going to be the main agenda point at that board meeting, JB?
No, well, I'll tell you, I say board meeting. It's a meeting of their board. So it'll be Brad, Andrew Swallow, the gentleman I just mentioned, and we sit down with them every year and have a dinner there. Great friends of ours, so it's got nothing to do with our board, more to do with theirs.
Very straight today, JP.
Yeah, he is.
Jim, you made some pretty strong comments to the local media in the build-up to this game during the week about, despite the injuries that North has had, that it's still been elements that have been unacceptable. It's pretty strong stuff from you.
Well, I didn't actually think it was, but they beat it up into something pretty strong. The guy just asked me about the last 8 weeks, and I said, well, there are probably reasons why we've played the way we've played. But having said that, there have been patches that have been totally unacceptable. And the weekend's a great example. 8-1 at quarter time against the Hawthorn team that was a shock loser the week before. So we shouldn't have been surprised that they were, you know, going to be snarling. So, you know, I mean, you look at that, and it doesn't matter who you've got playing for you, that's not good enough. Port Adelaide, on the start to that game, 7-1, I think, at quarter time there. So that's not good enough. So I don't think I was sort of telling anyone anything they didn't know. But, you know, we've got to be very good today. Otherwise, you know, Sydney will get hold of us.
Hey, JB, there was some pretty strong comments last week from Wayne Schwoss. Somehow my name got tagged onto it to make the story a little bit bigger. But Swatter spoke about older players.
Take ownership,
well,
Duck.
Swatter said it, and I was here, and I just sort of said, well, you make some good points, Swatter, and somehow my name got put first, bud.
This anyway, is about get to
the
point.
This is about Boomer Harvey and other some of the other older players.
Ask a question, Duck.
PT.
Come on, ask
you just
a question.
Calm down. You've had little sleep. I noticed you on the flight. So, JB, do you agree with some of those sentiments? And do you think you've got some tough decisions to make, obviously?
I certainly agree with that. I didn't actually hear what Schwatter said. But, you know, when you've got blokes, a good number of blokes over 30, then you've always got a tough decision to make at the end of the year. That's just night follows day, I reckon. And you've got to always do what's best for the footy club. So, you know, you've always got to exit your champions with great class. I think we've been pretty good at doing that. You know, you look at... In my time, Shannon Grant, Adam Simpson, Brady Rawlings, Glenn Archer, you know, they've all gone out of the club in my time as a director. And I think at North Melbourne, we've got a pretty good record of handling that well. So, yeah, there'll be tough decisions, but I'm very confident they'll be made the right way.
JB, talking about exiting, when does the baton hand over to the guy in the car with you, Ben Buckley? I know, you know, you've done an outstanding job at North, but when does that actually come to fruition?
The Sid Barker medal is, I think, on the 5th or 6th of October,
yep.
And that'll be my last official function as the chairman. And then I hand over to George Clooney in the front here, who's got ticking every box. And Ian Carl Delina, they've already got grey enough hair, so by the time their 10 years is done, they'll look like you, Spud.
Not exactly setting the world on fire in terms of enthusiasm, the blokes are with today, Delina and Benny Buckley. You're just having a boring old day.
Yeah, it's real glass eye stuff, JB.
They'll do a great job, and it'll free me up to clip you blokes around the ears. I've had to restrain myself over the last 10 years.
Very nice.
So two tough games, Jim, beginning with Sydney in a few minutes, really, and then GWS next week. What are you demanding happens?
Oh, well, you just demand ultimate effort, you know. I mean, that's whoever plays for you, you know. The most disappointing thing about the first 30 minutes of last week is not only were we 7 or 8 goals down at one stage on the scoreboard, but we're also behind on the tackle count. I think they had 8 tackles inside forward 50-0. You know, the pressure acts were non-existent. So I always say you don't need talent to do that. That's a mindset thing, and we didn't bring that last week for 30 minutes and were exposed badly on the back of it. So the next two games, it's 8 quarters. You know, the demand is that you crack in and you know, you play that sort of kamikaze-style footy that North Melbourne are famous for, and if we do that, we back ourselves to beat anyone no matter who plays. So that's what I expect.
You know, well, JB, the players need no distractions today. The last thing they need is you on the green stuff, mate. Because as soon as they see you out there, they go, oh, he's doing it again. The old Linneman sniffer's back out in the ground.
Not only on the ground, and by the way, I'm pretty sure I average nearly 70 down here. Go wherever I want. But it's not that, but I'm actually walking into the meeting. That's what I'm doing.
And then he goes upstairs.
If I see you on the broadcaster, mate, I'm flying down.
There's two things today, JB. No grass. and no holding hands.
It's about time you heard from the big man. I'm going to pin my ears right back.
Now, JB, just before we let you go, earlier today we've given Spud a bit of a reprimand in regard to over-texting last night's game.
Yes.
Between the group, 64 text messages in 2 hours.
It's embarrassing. Oh. It's like he's only just discovered it.
No, it was Chief. Chief is the one that started it, JB, and he probably wasn't overly happy with me nephew's form at that stage. Yeah. Nor was I.
I was going to say, he wasn't on his own in that group.
Oh, poor old Chip.
Him a fair pasting.
Good luck today, JB. That'll be some meeting down there, that board meeting.
Wish
we were there.
All right, behave yourselves, you lot, and see if you can keep the normal standard up.
Gee, Warriors phone just gone berserk, BT.
It has. There's some big news breaking. We had a bit of a Saturday sermon in regard to Kitty Chiller having her work cut out over there this year. I think it might have just increased, Damo. Has it or has it not?
Yeah, I think it has. Her workload will be significantly upped after this story by Todd Balham from the Gold Coast Bulletin saying that there are now several Australian Olympic athletes being questioned at a Rio police station for alleged accreditation tampering. And they were arrested at the basketball semi-finals, and Australia lost that game badly to Serbia. But it has been confirmed by the AOC team media boss, Mike Tancred. Some people try to tamper with their accreditation. They've got stopped by people over at the stadium. It's now a matter for the IOC. But not as serious as the Ryan Lochte thing, and probably not as serious as the other swimmer in the Australian team.
I'm believing up to 9 athletes could be involved in that, Australian athletes.
Yeah, in 3 different sports, which, I mean, as you know, when you get that the luxury of one of those accreditations, you do not, under any circumstances, tamper with it because they are gold, literally, over there. So
let's lock them up and throw away the key.
Oh, boy.
So what have they actually done? They've tampered with it.
I was being a little facetious there. Because
they're trying to get in.
They're
trying to get other people in.
Other people in on it.
So you've never done that at the races?
Come on, exactly.
Photocopy.
If you haven't done that at the races when you haven't got a member's ticket and you're passing through the gate.
Well, that's similar what they've done. But again, Kitty will have to get involved.
It's a shocking thing to do. You shouldn't be doing that sort of stuff.
Come on!
Let's get down to the boundary. Richmond coach Damien Hardwick is down there. Our man Ash Chew, we welcome you, Ash. You've got the coach of Richmond.
I have indeed, BT. Damien, thanks for joining us on Triple M Footy. You've been filtering through a fair whack of young talent this year. What can you tell us about Callum Moore, who becomes the 7th debutant for the Tigers in 2016?
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit, but I'm a little bit stunned, mate. It's the first time I've met you, the Chew here. I'm a little bit excited.
Watch
the
out.
The spa ready to go tonight, is it?
You'll be the target of Chew's view.
No, Callum Moore, look, he's a raw talent. He's got incredible speed, incredible athleticism. We're looking forward to seeing what he can present today. He's capable of jumping on heads, kick miraculous goals. But, you know, once again, we come in with probably little expectation. It's just great to see him have an opportunity to play today, and we're really excited about that.
How many have you used, Dimmer, on your list so far? 4 in again this week. What's the total numbers you've turned over on your list this week?
I think there's only 2 guys that haven't played. So we've used the vast majority at this stage, BT, which is never a good sign for a consistent season. And look, it's been one of those years, and there's a lot of sides in the same boat at this stage. But yeah, we still expected to play a lot better than what we have in the early parts of the year.
Good luck today, Dimmer. We're having a little discussion later on about the former Rants of East Scarlett Silvani. I know you're probably biased, but just give us an insight on the improvement from when you started to where he is today.
He's been outstanding. I must admit, when we first got here, he's incredibly athletic, but he's just so erratic with the way he played. And, you know, a lot of credit's got to go to Justin Lepich, who did a truckload of work with him and, really brought him into the player that he's become today. And, look, he's incredible. It's, generally when the ball goes into the back line, you do worry. But I know that I've got one of the best players that I've ever seen, to be perfectly frank, down there, which is great. And, you know, he's improved pretty much every year we've been here. We do get tempted every now and then to throw him forward or in the midfield, but he's incredible down back. And look, if we could get a couple more of him, we'd be certainly a lot better than what we are.
So has his kicking improved as well, Denver? Is he now one of your better kicks?
I think his decision making's improved, BT. He's not a naturally gifted kick, but what I would say is his decision making's improved. We used to call them Rants-like moments. There's been less of those over the course of the years. You know, he just makes an easy decision every time. You know, he doesn't try and invent kicks that are, you know, out of his limits, which is a sign of maturity, but it's a sign of him improving as a player.
So, Dimmer, you've said one of the better players you've seen. You've played with a lot of stars. You've coached as an assistant at Hawthorn and seen some great players there. It's and I'm biased, but you think he's one of the better players that you've coached and played with or seen?
I think he is, Spud. Someone asked me this question the other day. I was at a function. They sort of said, if you had to pick one player in the AFL at the moment, who you'd pick, Alex would be pretty close to the guy I'd pick. You know, fullbacks are very, very hard to find, especially guys that win possession games, but also average about, 16 to 20 touches. Like, those guys are really, really valuable. And, it's probably a shame that, the Brownlow medal is a little bit biased with regard to, probably a little bit's an understatement, biased towards midfielders, but he doesn't quite get the recognition, I think, or the key defenders don't really get the recognition they deserve.
I'm with you, Dimmer. I think he's the best player in the competition right now because he's a key position player. He's absolutely sensational. I want to ask you about a bloke, young Lennon. Why has he played so little this year?
Yeah, he's had a horrid run with injury. He had glandular fever at the start of the year. He's had two other injuries since, and in fairness to Ben, I've been dying to play him. I played him under Dunn last week, and I apologise to the lad. Look, he's an important player for us, incredibly gifted. We're just playing him at the moment. He's running on half rat power, to be frank, and we just need to get another game under his belt and hopefully he can come back in. I would have liked to have persevered with him this week, but we had an opportunity to play these younger tall forwards that were just probably too good. But look, he's an important player for us. He's really, really capable, Ben, and he's an excitement machine as well. So we look forward to him having a better year next year with a solid pre-season under his belt.
Damien, I know you've got more pressing concerns than this issue right now, but it must have been heartening for you to receive the news that Deion Pressier does want to become a Tiger for next year.
Nice try, Damien.
Not going to even give me a fob off answer.
Yeah. Oh, mate, we don't talk about those issues. We wait till they happen and we'll see how it plays
out. All right, well, I think we'll be pretty happy.
Nice try, though.
Yeah, I think we'll be pretty happy then anyway. Hey, Hampson's form this year, he's critiqued by a lot of people quite regularly, isn't he? But I feel that he's maybe one of those players who's viewed far differently to the way we do on the outside.
Yeah, look, he's got a significant area of improvement as well. We heavily invested in Sean this year. We knew we had to. Ivan has been really gallant for us, but we felt for us to take the next step that we needed a better tap ruckman. What Sean can improve is around the ground. He's been inconsistent with that. At various stages we've seen what we think he is capable of. At various stages he's been a little bit inconsistent in that area, but he's definitely worth persevering for us. We think he's been a pretty solid contributor for us this year. I think he's ranked AFL 5 in hit-outs and hit-outs to advantage, which is generally an area that we've struggled in over the course of the last 2 to 3 years.
Just before we let you go, Damien, is Tua the sort of specimen that you expected to see? You've just met him for the first time today. What did you expect, and how has the result of what you've seen been?
Look, it's not what I think. It's what Mrs. Tua thinks. It's important, mate. He's a little underwhelming, I must admit. I'm intimidating in stature, but he's got a very deep voice, so something's obviously going right for him.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
Stay with us, Chewman. How have you handled that, Chua?
No, I've handled it okay. You're right. I always feel a little bit underwhelmed when I'm standing in front of an AFL coach, especially as someone as hard as Damien Hardwick. But everyone seems to know about this Spurs situation, don't they, BT? An AFL coach does.
We've had a bit of a lean time at the last 12 weeks, Chua.
Super lean, Spud, I can tell you that. Well overdue.
Goodbye to Duck. Duck's going to shift out here. Taking his spot is Wayne Swass. Welcome to you, Swatter.
Hello, Brian. Hello, boys.
Swatter, you look pretty fresh, mate. Where are you going?
Straight off the plane back from Coolangatta this morning, Spud. 5 days of nice sunshine up there was beautiful.
Just five? You took a time off during the week?
Just took final siren last
family?
Week.
Family?
Took them all up there and came back this morning.
Okay.
Yep.
It's just one big holiday for you.
Oh, no, Brian. Didn't miss a game, unlike somebody else baggage? Who's just departed.
Did you bring all the baggage back, or you've...
Yeah.
The baggage is sort of...
travel light.
Bit lighter.
Spud.
Okay.
Always travel
all
light.
All good.
Very nice. Joining us here in the Triple M commentary box, Tom Hickey, of course, with the Saints. And the Saints are playing here today. They're playing the Tigers. Tom, welcome to you. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
What do you make of the Triple M setup here with Big Spud Regis just dominating the round table discussion?
Yeah, it's a pretty relaxed setup, isn't it? It's weird that Spud has a throne, though, compared to everyone else.
Tom knows that. Now, Tommy, to be brutally honest, where's the improvement come from you, mate? You've
been brilliant.
You have been outstanding. We know you're out for a couple of weeks with a Solis, hopefully only for a week, but where's the big improvement come from? Because you're now ranked in the top two or three ruckmen in the comp.
I think... just having a full pre-season, it's the first time in a couple of years I've been able to get that. So that's been really handy. And just sort of getting more time on the field is getting more time and opportunity to ruck sort of helps. And I've been working pretty hard with our ruck coach, Adam Skrobelak. And Who? I think it's pretty. He's our ruck coach, yeah. So
Adam
Skrobolak,
very good ruck coach.
What club did he play at?
No, he didn't. He's a Geelong boy. He's a Geelong specialist. Football League down there. Ex-coach and does an outstanding
Come on,
job.
Brian.
Scrappers.
Hey, Skrobolak Brian. I tell you what, be very careful. The Skrobolak family down at Geelong.
Oh, boy.
There's a long list of them, Brian, and they hit pretty hard, the lads.
Okay.
But he does a great job, doesn't he?
He's been really good. He's pretty enthusiastic. So, I've got a really good working relationship with Big Scrobber.
How's the other coach go that is with us at the moment?
He's pretty good specky bag. I don't have too much to do with... With Spud, I don't spend too much time in
sort
the
back of a natural thing.
Good thing for him.
Being a specky bag, I would have thought.
Hey,
happened most of his career.
Yeah, move on.
I happened to be in the Swans rooms after last week's game, and they said the opening half was the hardest half of footy they've played in their entire year, which is a pretty big tick, even though the result was pretty poor towards the end of the game last week. What went wrong in that second half against Sydney? Because that first half was unbelievably good footy.
Yeah, well, in my personal opinion, it's kind of... All year we've been sort of wearing down teams with our pressure, and I feel as though first half it was pretty even, and then second half they sort of ramped a little bit and kind of wore us down, and we were really clean in the first half and were able to get the ball to the outside, and then as soon as the second half hit, fumbled a little bit, and they had that many blokes around the ball that they just streamed out.
Your ability to hold your structure and play to the way that you've planned to play, I reckon, has been the big bonus for you guys in combination with your pressure skills. Obviously, that just sort of... It sort of slowly evaporated in last week's game, didn't it?
Yeah, it felt like they just sort of went up a little notch, and we struggled to go with them. And because they like it in tight and so close, they've sort of had three blokes as soon as we fumbled the ball that they were all over it and they could just stream out. So it was disappointing that we couldn't sort of execute those fundamentals, but we'll take a heaps out of that first half.
Tom, you've been able to shoulder most of the ruck on your own this year and getting snippets from Brucey down the forward half. I think a lot of people don't understand the endurance you've got from a ruckman. You're quite elite, aren't you? Like your 3K time trials and your ability to run out games has been probably been understated a little bit.
Well, there's not too much of me, Spud. I'm only about 98 kilos.
What is your 3K time?
It'd be 10:20, 10:15.
Yeah, which is right up there for a ruckman.
Yeah. So there's not too much of me, so I've got to to run around and get them tired.
And Jason Holmes included today, similar to last year where he got the chance late in the season. He's done well to hang on, hasn't he, given that there's been competition, obviously, from others at the club too, but Billy Longham mainly.
Yeah, it's been, I think, really frustrating for the other three boys this year with having three ruckmen in the VFL, not being able to get really any continuity in the games, but... They've all been super, and there was a bit of a ruck off on Thursday where the boys put the pads on and jumped into each other, and we know Hampson's a pretty good centre bounce ruckman, and so Holmes got the nod.
Is there a risk today now that mathematically you won't make the finals or you can't make the finals, whereas that was a live opportunity last week? Had you been able to get over Sydney, that the team could drop off for the remaining two games, given the advancements that you've made as a group this year?
There's always a possibility, but I don't think so. I think sort of for us, it didn't really matter. Like it would have been awesome if we played finals, but we're not here just to play finals this year. We want sustained success. So we really want to use these last few games as a springboard into next year. And Rui and Joey have been huge on it. That few years before they were playing finals, they had a really big end to their season that they could really launch into.
Had you made the finals this year, do you think that would have been a bit premature, given where the group's at?
I think if you make the finals, you can dare to dream a little bit. I think in the grand scheme of things, finals probably wasn't on the card for a lot of the media, and we kind of surprised ourselves with how well we've been playing. So whether it be premature or not, we've matched it with a few of the good teams in the comp, so we would have been able to dare to dream, but we can just sort of recoup and have a red-hot crack next year.
What's the setup away from the footy club for you, Tom? Are you a girlfriend, boyfriend, married? Where are you at?
Yeah, I live with my girlfriend and a Kelpie, our little dog. So.
Oh, yeah. Are you a country boy?
No, I'm from Brisbane.
Brisbane, yeah. Okay. And what job-wise, have you been doing anything outside footy?
We're actually doing a few of us doing a carpentry apprenticeship, of course. And the Richmond boys do it as well, so it's kind of the...
What are you nodding for, Spud?
You're into that
you
as well, woodwork.
You couldn't hammer a nail.
Yes, I'm very good, and it's great that they're doing that, but you're a bit of a carpenter yourself, so I thought you would like that.
I'm a plumber, but that's good.
You like dealing with woodwork and making tables?
Yeah, I do.
Blowing things up, pretty good at it. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, Tom, nice having you aboard. Have we got any more questions for
Tom? I've got a couple. The improvement in the fitness. Matty Hornsby, I know Brian's not big on the conditioning stuff.
No, but he's a gun.
But Matty Hornsby's able to come in and really inject a belief in the running game and the pressure that the Saints put on.
Yeah, no, Matty's been huge. I think what he's really good at, his running side's really good, but the way he manages the whole plan and the whole program week in, week out to sort of maximise that, we're 100% by the weekend. Mm. So he's very good at listening to the players, and if our bodies are a bit sore, we might spend a day at St Kilda Sea Baths rather than go down to Seaford. Yep. So he's been really good at managing players throughout the whole year, and touch wood, I think we've been pretty good with soft tissues and whatnot.
And having rucked against pretty much everyone this year, as you have done, and with Goldstein dropping away a little bit and with Nick Natanui being injured for a large chunk of the year, who has been, in your eyes, the best ruckman for 2016?
I think Maxie Gawn's been the most all-round. I think his ability for his contested marking as well as his rucking is a big lump. So he's probably been the standout number one. I reckon Kurt Tippett would have been right up there if he didn't get hurt. I think he was super underrated for the first half of the year. And I really like Sammy Jacobs as well, just the way he can get the ball around the ground and sort of be that extra midfielder.
I know Tom won't say that, but he's beaten Gawn twice comprehensively this year. So he's come from, fair to say, a low base, Tom, to be in the best two or three ruckmen in the competition. And, you know, for Saints supporters, it's great to have a ruckman for the next 10 years, Brian.
It is indeed. Tom, appreciate you making the effort to come up here with the best-looking media guide in the business.
What's
his name, Tom?
Joshy Galgleish. So get him on Instagram, get him on Twitter.
Not disagreeing with you, Brian.
He's got a bit of Fabio. Look at that. Patrick Swayze. Patrick Swayze, yes.
Patrick Swayze.
Spud, you've been designated the senior assistant coach to Tim Watson in the EJ Witten Legends game, which is coming up in that bye weekend on the Friday night, of course.
It'll be fantastic, Brian. Channel 7 obviously broadcasting with the help of Fox Footy, and everyone's getting involved, and it's going to be a great night, BT.
And
broadcast on Triple M. Not only that, it's going to be a great thing for men's health in general, Brian. So we encourage all families to get along and watch it on the broadcast.
Duck's going to play, Richo's going to play, all the
Jonathan
stars.
Brown. I've led Wayne to believe the men's health thing's going to be a good thing. And I've led to believe during the week, Brian, that you may have had a little bit of a procedure regarding men's health.
I did, actually.
Yeah, yes. It was actually a big procedure, Brian.
Boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
A colonoscopy.
What was it?
The silver stallion.
Yeah.
And what did they find, Brian?
When he showed me the instrument, I said, oh, no.
Yeah, no. I think you went, oh, yes.
It was funny, actually, because this is true. So we're at the colonoscopy clinic just down here in East Melbourne. We're waiting to go, and there's about 10 people in the room. You're all looking at each other going, oh, you're having one too. Oh, boy. and anyway, we've got the cameraman there to shoot it for Channel 7.
So we're going to be seeing this in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
The actual insertion of the silver stallion?
During the EJ Witten coverage.
I hope not.
Anyway, the two cameramen walked in with their big cameras, and one of the guys sitting over in the corner there waiting for his colonoscopy said, shit, I didn't know the camera was going to be that big.
So, Brian, is it true?
Had a 4-inch lens on it.
Yeah. So, for anyone listening, anyone aged over the age of 50, and we're sort of getting that air, and for you, Warrior, and Luke, the producer, and Swatter, is it true after the colonoscopy there's a little bit of flatulence, Brian? Do we get that on the camera, the amount of flatulence?
There's a fair bit of it.
Do we need to go there, Spud?
No, we don't.
Too late, Damo.
All men should have it done. There's a fair bit of air. Now, Spud.
Yep.
Fullbacks.
Yep.
Rance, Scarlett, Silvani.
Fletcher, Silvani. Yep. Not only that, is he the best player in the comp today? We've had it. Wayne Carey said he's the best player in the comp this year. We've had Damien Hardwick 20 minutes ago. Probably got laughed down or howled down by Warrior and JB about 2 or 3 weeks ago about the fact that Rance
don't misrepresent
could be,
what
could be
we said.
The number one player in the comp this year. Not only that,
no, Spud, don't just back over
little,
that.
I've done a little. No, I'm not backing over it.
What I was trying to do was ask you questions to elicit more information.
Yeah, who asked JB who's the better player of Scarlett and Rance. I would have thought you would have asked Wayne Carey, BT, myself,
anyway,
or
get on
Swatter.
With it.
But anyway, I've done some homework, BT and guys, about the fact that Rance and Scarlett. I'll throw Fletcher in, but the Rance Scarlett. So disposals, their average disposals is Rance is 16.8, Scarlett's 14.8. Now the kicking effectiveness. Now, who would you think's the better kick out of Scarlett and Rance, Swatter?
I'd say Scarlett.
Yeah, he is 82%. The league average is 66, but Rance, funnily enough, goes at 75.8%. And as we heard Damien Hardwick, early days went for a little bit too much. So he makes the correct decisions. And I think I'll give Scarlett a tick for that. We all agree with that?
Yep.
Marks,
don't
six.
Try and push this into a corner with this.
No, I'm not. 6 marks average Rance, Scarlett 5. So marks.
So even.
Even, pretty even. Tackles, Rance 3.5, Scarlett 1.5.
Oh boy.
So we would have thought that maybe Rance gets more opportunities to tackle, because remember Geelong and Scarlett, coming in a little bit more. So,
and it's more attacking game than it probably was from Scarlett.
Yeah, so, but we've got to give Rance a tick for that.
More tackling.
Spoils. Now, Spoils, I know you think it's a bit boring, Brian, but he averages 6.5 spoils a game.
Who does?
Rance.
Yeah.
Scarlett, 2.5.
Yeah, but how many marks?
Yeah, well, I'm getting to that.
Scarlett
was 6.5 and Rance was 6.
Take notes, BT.
But now I'm going into the intercept marks, Brian.
Yeah.
So Rance wins the spoils. The intercept marks, Rance averages 3 intercept marks a game, Scarlett 1. So, and you've got to understand that Scarlett, later in his career, didn't play on the keys. He was sort of like the guy that floated, and rightly so. He had to divulge a plan around Scarlett. How do we get around him? Rebounds. Now, this is where Scarlett gets on top.
But just on this, though, is it fair to say that because the ball seems to be coming into the Richmond back line more than it would have in the Cats back line? So I'm just, we need to factor this in, don't we? As we wade through this.
Spot on, Warrior. Yeah. It's a great segue into the next rebounds, because Scarlett leads the rebounds with 3.5. Rance only 1.8. But here's where it gets very, very interesting.
Right.
The goals per season conceded. Now, we think as an offender, that's a pretty big stat.
Yep.
Rance concedes, on average, throughout his 8 seasons, 27 goals, which is a great effort.
Scarlett?
Scarlett, 31.
Over how many years?
Scarlett, 14. But we're talking Scarlett playing in one of the better teams through his era.
Yeah.
And Rance, the ball's going in more.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you the ingredient missing for Alex Rance.
Okay.
Longevity.
But he can't compete on that front yet, BT.
To that, Brian. I know, but that's why you can't put him in that category.
But 8 years is, you can.
So my point of view is, Rance, as we speak now, will be the first $1 million, because what was Hurley reportedly?
800,000?
Well, I'm telling you now, if Hurley's on 800 for 6 years, I would contract Rance now on 1.25 to 1.3 or even 1.5. If that's what Hurley, if that is what Hurley's being given, because all due respect to Michael Hurley, he's no Alex Rance.
So you're saying he's twice the player of Hurley?
Not twice the player, but he's a better player.
Well, that's what you're willing to pay him.
Well, I'm willing to pay him that, because if you send Rance and Hurley up, not only that, you stand in a schoolyard and put Rance, Dangerfield and Franklin up against the wall.
Interesting that
pick Rance.
You put Scarlett ahead of Silvani automatically, have you?
No, I didn't. I haven't got Silvani in it, because...
Why are you comparing Rance to Silvani?
No, because Silvani hasn't got the stats from Champion Data. So I was just trying to back it up with a little bit of stats. I think Silvani's still the best defender one-on-one. Now, we don't get that as much now. We concede that. But my point is, Rance is on his way to go above Scarlett. Your longevity is spot on, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
But all I'm saying at the moment, that Alex Rance doesn't get the credit he deserves. I think he's one in a generation.
I don't think he does now.
I think we've got to put him up into another level. I think Scarlett, we talk about him being the premier defender of his era. Silvani, no doubt.
How long's he played at this level so far? 2 years?
No, it'll be about 4 years now.
No, he hasn't played.
It's not four.
Well, he's been All Australian twice. He'll be 3 All Australians in a row. So there's 3.
Yeah.
So All Australians at the moment. Scarlett was 4. Rance, I think, will get to 5 or 6. Silvani was 7. So an elite defender of his era. So my point of view is, we are now privileged to sit up here today and see one of the best defenders of all time. That's what I'm prepared to say. Duck said he's the best player this year. And Damien Hardwick is superseded to say he's one of the best players that he's played with, coached against, coached with, and seen. And you throw in some of the stars that Hardwick play with. Hurd, you've got Franklin at Hawthorne, you've got Wanganeen at Port. So I think we're privileged to see a Rance, and I just want to put that on the record, Brian.
Well done, Spud. Some good support there in the way of statistics for that, but I'm not sure you quite got it done.
No, I didn't get it done. A bit like your sermon, Brian. I'm not sure where the punchline was with Kenny Chiller or the American
selection system.
I was a little confused. Damo, have you got one to leave us, or is simply good afternoon
to
you?
No, he's here all day, Brian.
I'm actually coming back.
He's here till 6 o'clock.
Match 2, BT, today.
Well, don't worry.
Very good.
Just with the Brisbane line situation with Justin Lepich, board meeting Tuesday night, there will be a resolution of sorts to come out of that, and as you know, for probably 6 to 8 weeks now, I felt strongly that he will not be coaching into 2017, so that'll take shape, in my eyes anyway, in the next 7 to 10 days, and It is still a watch this space, as we touched on before with the player movement part of our program today with Fremantle. The coaching situation with Ross Lyon, still 4 years to run, but he's going to need to change his ways in order to keep some players who want out and also in order to attract players.
Shut up! The footies on Triple M!
Triple M rocks football.